Shabbat Shalom again. Not a beautiful song. Welcome to you in Facebook and YouTube land. I know you didn't hear the songs, but that's a song by Marty and Misha Goetz. And some of you have probably heard Marty sing. I'm sure you guys have. And that song was, they did this video right when the pandemic was at full blast. It was like the beginning of April of 2020. And you know, he started doing all these concerts from home, and he released that song. And he was very frustrated that he couldn't go anywhere to play it live. And of course, he has since then. But this is what we're going to talk about tonight for such a time as this. And as we've said here before, there's a reason we're here right now. There's a reason that we're living in this time, in this place. We were born at a time where we were supposed to be born. We're in a place we're supposed to be. We're associated with people we're supposed to be associated with. And like Paul says in Acts 17, God puts everybody where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. So, you know, we weren't supposed to be around, you know, we weren't supposed to be in England in 1308. We were supposed to be here now, for such a time as this. And we didn't know probably when we were born the times we were going to be living in, which are probably the most exciting times in history. We're the generation that's seeing prophecy unfold. We're the generation that is going to probably experience Yeshua coming, maybe today, I hope. But no other generation has experienced all of these prophecies all come together. So we're here for such a time as this. And of course, what we're going to use is the book of Esther. Now, I know Purim was the other day, and I'm sure you guys probably celebrated it. And I wasn't here last Friday, which I kind of regretted not doing Purim, and Monica did another awesome thing. So we're going to kind of quickly run through it and concentrate on the very end of it, because this is all from the book of Esther. And if you like to play Bible trivia with your friends, there's a Bible question that's always in trivia questions. And that is, there's only one book in the Bible where God isn't mentioned, and it's the book of Esther. It's an interesting book. The background of it is, you know, the people were taken into exile in Babylon because of their idolatry, their disobedience. The Babylonians took people back to Babylon in waves. They took like the intelligent, hardworking people first, then the next level. So pretty soon, most of the population was in Babylon. And Daniel, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, it was a great time of great prophets. Those were the major prophets. The minor prophets as well, at least half of them were during this time. And then in the book of Nehemiah and Ezra, we learn about how the king says, okay, you guys can go back to your land. You can rebuild your temple. You can do all the stuff. I'm going to give you protection. I'm going to help you out with money and resources. You can go back. And so if you read through Nehemiah, you'll see how they went back. Although they were taken to Babylon, Babylon was conquered by Persia. And so the Persians came in. This is where the writing on the wall happens in the book of Daniel. And the Persians snuck into the city, took over the Babylonian Empire, became the Persian Empire. Not all the Jews went back to the land. Some elected to stay. They liked it there. They were well-treated. They had businesses, opened up some delis. And Corky and Lenny's ancestors were there. If you're not from Cleveland, you won't get that. But anyway, so some of the Jews elected to stay behind in Persia. The majority went back to the land. So this is where this book takes place. And We have to go to the king. We're going to just go through the story really quick. You probably all know about this. I'm going to apologize ahead of time for skimming through this. This is not even the Cliff Notes edition. This takes place when King Ahasuerus, who most people think is the same guy as Artaxerxes, although that's not clear, he's the king of the Persian Empire. And he has a fair number of Jewish subjects in his kingdom. And they've always been well treated. The Babylonians didn't really enslave the Jews. They didn't mistreat them. The Jews actually did okay there, to the point where some of them didn't want to go back when it was done. So he's the king. They're in the Persian Empire. And kings at that time, you can imagine, had a great number of women. Some, many that they were married to, many that they were, I don't know if they called them harems in those days, but needless to say, they had a lot of women. And when you were the king, you could pretty much, if you saw a woman that you wanted, you could send your guys out and say, bring her over here. And then she got included into the thing. So there was no shortage of women, and there were actually multiple wives. But there was one wife who was called the queen, who had a special position. Even if the guy had 12 wives, there was one who was called the queen. And this was Queen Vashti. We're going to go over this at the end to show each of these characters signify something, kind of metaphorically. So Queen Vashti is banished from the court because the king has this drunken party. And there's food and there's drinks and the party's going on for days. So all these guys are drunk, the king is drunk, and he wants Queen Vashti to come in and dance for everybody who's there. And it points out in the Bible that she's a beautiful woman. The Hebrew implies that he wants her to dance naked in front of all these drunk guys. So she refuses to go. And so he banishes her from the kingdom. She's no longer the queen. She's cast out of the palace. And he says, we got to find a new queen because Vashti's gone and she's not allowed to come back. Also with the Persians, when the king made a decree, it was binding forever. The king could not undo a decree that he had made. So if the king of the Persians said, you can't ride your chariot any faster than 10 miles an hour, it couldn't be changed after that. So once Vashti was banished, she was banished. And we're going to search for a new queen. And before we get to Mordecai, what they did was they basically went around the kingdom looking for beautiful young women for the king. It was a tough job, but somebody had to do it. So they went around the kingdom, and they found this young woman whose name was actually Hadassah, was her Hebrew name. We know her as Esther, which was her Babylonian/Persian name. It's kind of interesting that we only know her. She's never called Hadassah in the scripture. You know, the three young men that are thrown in the fire in Babylon, we know them by their Babylonian names. Their Hebrew names are listed there, but we know them by their Babylonian names. Daniel also had a Babylonian name, but Daniel was his Hebrew name. We know him as Daniel. So I'm not sure why that is, and it probably means something. But Esther was the word for star. So her parents had been killed. She was raised by, some translations say her cousin, some say her uncle, raised by Mordecai. And obviously they were Jews. Now, the people who saw her said, let's take her to the king. She's good looking. We don't even have to deal with her parents. We're taking her back to the palace. And they take her back to the king. Now, the king's prime minister, so to speak, is a guy named Haman. And it tells us he's an Agagite. Now, the reason he's making noise over there is when you say Haman's name, you're supposed to make a disgusting sound. So when you do a Purim play, whenever the word Haman comes up, everybody goes boo or makes, they have noisemakers and stuff. So we thought since we have a little crowd tonight, we probably aren't going to make a lot of noise anyway. But anyway, he was actually an Amalekite. Now, without going into all of this, you remember the Amalekites attacked the people in the wilderness right after they left Egypt. This was the battle where Moses kept his hands up. They would win. If he put his hands down, they would lose. So Aaron and Hur held his arms up. And then they defeated the Amalekites. And God said, these Amalekites are always going to be looking for your destruction. In the book, in 1 Samuel, God tells King Saul to kill every single Amalekite, to not let one single Amalekite remain alive, and their livestock. So the men, the women, the children, and the livestock, every one of them. And if you leave any Amalekites behind, they're going to torment you for history. Well, he didn't do that. Haman the Agagite was an Amalekite. A lot of Jewish thinkers think that Hitler was somehow an Amalekite. And maybe some of the other great persecutors over the last couple of millennia. So he's kind of the prime minister. He's the closest advisor to the king. Esther Hadassah comes into the court. They give her all the makeup and the dresses and stuff, and the king says, I want her. So she becomes the king, the queen. She becomes the official queen. So she's actually the queen of Persia. You got to read this all through your homework. It's a short book. You can sit down tomorrow or tonight and read it. It won't take you very long. So the king accepts her. The other law about this kingdom is the king decides who comes into the room to see him. Even if it's one of his wives, even if it's his main wife, even if it's somebody who's going to come in and tell him some kind of news, no one can come into the king's room unless he tells them to come in. And the penalty is death. That's why in that song that Misha and Marty were singing, it implies like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. Because the king can have even his wife executed if she violates this privacy that he has. So Haman is such a proud, obnoxious guy that he wants everybody in the kingdom to bow down when he passes by. And Mordecai won't do that. He's raised Esther. Esther's now living in the palace. She's not living with him anymore. He's not going to bow down to Haman. We should have brought some noisemakers. So Haman gets so upset about this, and he has such a violent hatred of what Mordecai's done, he decides all the Jews have to be killed. And they're all going to be killed on the same day. Yeah, that's like having some, you know, some person insult you today, and then you decide everybody who belongs to that ethnic group should be killed just because one guy, you don't like one guy. So all the Jews are going to be killed, and they're going to they cast lots to see what day they're going to do this. All the Jews are going to be killed on the same day. They're going to build gallows and hang them all, which, you know, doesn't seem very efficient unless there's 20 of them. But we don't know how many there were. So all over the kingdom, they're going to hang the Jews all on the same day. So they cast lots to see what day this is going to be. And the word for a lot is pur, so purim, purim is the plural. So basically they throw dice to see what day they're going to do this. And the winning number comes up in the month of Adar, which is in March, which is around now. Purim actually was celebrated about, I don't know, 3 days ago or two, three days ago. So the king doesn't have any trouble with the Jews. They've been there forever. I mean, they've been there for 100 years. The king doesn't have any trouble with them. But Haman goes and tells the king, you know, these people are different. You can't trust these people. They're foreigners. We got to get rid of these people. Can't be trusted. And so the king says, okay, Haman, you write this all up and go ahead and do it. So he gives him permission to kill all the Jews on a certain day. And he writes it. Now, once the edict is given, it can't be undone. That was one of their main things. Can't undo it. So on a certain day, they're all going to be killed. Everybody in the city finds out about this, and they're confused. They've been living with these Jews. They've been shopping at their stores. They've been going to the deli. They love the corned beef and latkes. They got Reuben sandwiches. I mean, they've gotten used to this. See, Ron's taking Jordan's place. So tell Jordan. So the city's confused. Why are we going to kill all the Jews? You know, they've not done anything to us. We kind of like having them here. And they're all going to be killed on the same day. So actually, people in the city start to mourn this. Like, how can this be possible? They can't do anything about it. But they don't like the idea. The Jews hear about this, and they start to pray. They start to fast. They put on sackcloth and ashes. Even the Persians pray along with them and put on sackcloth and ashes. So they're hoping, the Jews are hoping somehow God's going to deliver them from the king, deliver them from this horrible punishment. So Esther is Jewish. She kind of knows that she is, but when they were interviewing her, Mordecai said, don't say anything about being a Jew, because that's going to ruin your chances of being queen. So just keep your mouth shut. So she denied her Judaism and hasn't mentioned it to anybody. Now keep that in mind. She's the queen, and she kind of doesn't want to admit that she's Jewish and kind of has forgotten that she's Jewish, because now she's living in the palace. So she doesn't know about what Haman's doing and all this other stuff, but she doesn't get what's going on. But she knows there's some problem. Mordecai's trying to get word to her. She's so out of it that she thinks, oh, I'm going to send Mordecai some clothes. They must be like in an economic depression or something. And she's trying to understand what's going on. And Mordecai gets the decree to her that all the Jews are going to be killed on this certain day. And says, you have to do something about this. You're the only one who can. You're the only one who can go see the king. You're the only one who can try to change his mind. You'll have to admit that you're a Jew, but you're going to have to go in and do it, because it's our only hope. Is there a hope? Yes, this is it. Only one hope. So I should add that Mordecai was kind of a hero, because he overheard two guys that were going to kill the king. And so the king was, of course, happy about that. We're going to get to that in a minute. So she has to intercede with the king, but she's afraid, because you can't go into his room without being called. You might be executed. I know it sounds kind of funny, but you know, when you have, I don't know, multiple wives, and you have multiple concubines, mistresses, or whatever you want to call them, you know, it's hard to say how often she sees the king, because he's kind of, you know, all over the place. So she's been away for a while. And Mordecai tells her, you know, you're not going to escape this either. They're going to kill all the Jews on March 10th or whatever it is. And as soon as they find out you're a Jew, you're going to get hung too. You're not going to escape this. Even though you're the queen. You know, remember what he did to the other queen? It'll be even worse with you, because you haven't been forthright with him. You didn't tell him the whole truth about yourself. They'll hang you on the same gallows. So you're not going to escape. 4:13, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish." God is not going to let the people perish. You're here because you might be able to do this. If you decide you're not going to do this, and then later they hang you and your father's house disappears, God will have the plan initiated from somebody else. Right? If he's got a plan for you and you say, "Man, I don't want to do that," he doesn't say, "Oh, what am I going to do now? I'm never going to be able to do my plan." He'll say, "No, you lose. I'm going to pick somebody else. Somebody else will rise." Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Maybe the reason you were born and the reason that you're here and the reason you're here at this time is to save your people from these murderers, from this Haman and his henchmen, literally. I mean, this was like, you know, the precursor of the SS. They were going to round them up and hang them. But maybe you're here just for this. Like maybe we're here just for what we're doing. So the situation is set up providentially. God is in control of the situation, right down to Mordecai being a hero because he saved the king, Esther being taken into the palace to be the queen. The situation's getting set up because we don't always know what the plan is. They don't always know what the plan is. Esther didn't go out to see the guys that were interviewing women and say, "Well, maybe God's chosen me to do this, and maybe this is why." No. Just like we always joke about, you know, the people that Paul and those other evangelists preached to, they didn't get up in the morning and say, "Gee, I hope somebody comes today, tells us about the Jewish Messiah." We'd really like to, furthest thing from their mind. So here, she doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, but he always has a plan. So it's either going to be Esther or it's going to be somebody else. If Esther gets hung, it's going to be another Jewish person who's going to be the deliverer. Now keep all these characters in mind. So the people are not going to be destroyed. And now this is, remember, this is about, 500 BC, more or less. I don't know exactly what year it was. But let's say temple's destroyed in 586. The exile's 70 years long. Most of the people go back. She stays. So maybe it's like the 490s BC, 500 BC. So in 500 BC, what's happened? There have been promises made to the patriarchs. God promises Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They're going to have land. They're going to have descendants. All the people of the earth are going to be blessed because of them. All the people of the earth are going to be blessed because of them. So can the Jews be wiped out before that happens? No. There's a covenant between God and these people. They're the only people that have the covenant. Is he going to wipe out, let every single one of them be wiped out? No, they have an agreement. They have a covenant. They have an intimate contract. They're the chosen people. They're the only ones who have it. And most importantly, the Messiah hasn't come yet. And we know Messiah, Mashiach, has to come from these people. They are his biological body, so to speak. Real biology, real body, real heredity. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, all the way down the line. David, all the way down the line. Mary, Joseph, all the way down the line. He's born from these people. So he hasn't been born yet. So God can't let all the Jews be wiped out in 500 BC, or all these promises are gone. So he's a God that who's no one can trust his promises. That's not going to happen. So what's Esther's response? I'm going to pray and fast. Isn't that awesome? I'm going to pray and fast. I got to see what God wants me to do. This is going to be a threat to my life, but my people are going to be destroyed. Now I'm remembering, you know, I'm a Jew. Mordecai raised me. I have to do something. I can't just enjoy living in the palace. And then 2 months from now, somebody says, ha, she's a Jew. And they take me out to the gallows. So she prays and she fasts. She prepares herself and says, I have to talk to the king even if I perish. If he has me executed, okay, but I have to try it. You know, we may be executed by the society. Maybe not physically yet, but we're going to be canceled. We're going to be ridiculed. You might not get hired for a job. You might get fired from a job. You might not, people may not want you around because you're a Jesus follower. They may not want you around because you stand for Judeo-Christian morality. And I think you could get a little bit of a clue that our society doesn't stand for that anymore. Oh, come on. That was funny. So we may be banished just because of what we do, just because of what we think. Remember, Yeshua himself said, people are going to hate you because they hated me first. If everybody in the world loves you, something's wrong. You must not be doing anything. And as I like to say, and I don't know anything about Winston Churchill's spiritual thoughts, but he said, you have enemies? Well, that's great. That means you stand for something. If you don't stand for anything, you won't have any enemies. So she's going to do it. Verse 16, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. You know, and all the people who have been martyred since the time of Jesus, in the 2 centuries of Christian history, how many people have been martyred? People could have saved themselves by saying, I renounce Christ, I'm just kidding, I don't care anything more about that, just let me live. Maybe some did, but most believers said, I'm not renouncing Christ, you can go ahead and kill me. Because what's the point of preserving your physical life if that's going to damn you? So I'm going to do it. If I perish, I perish. So the king, one night, talk about providence, can't sleep. And he's walking around the palace and he's tossing and turning and he's doing stuff on his computer and he's reading a book and doing some stuff on Facebook and gets to be like 3 in the morning. He's still awake. So he decides, you know, instead of calling for one of his women, instead of calling for his military people, whatever, he wants his guys to bring him some historical records of some period of time. And he starts flipping through them at, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And he remembers this incident about Mordecai. And he says to his advisors, how did we honor Mordecai? And they said, well, we didn't really. And they said, oh, he needs to be honored. He saved my life. We need to honor Mordecai. Haman's going to do that. Now, outside the window of this place, the gallows are built to hang Mordecai. And the king in the middle of the night says, it's going to be Haman's job to honor Mordecai. See how this whole plan is like set into action. So Esther goes in to the king and says, you have to save my people. What do you mean, your people? You got to save my people. Oh, there's one thing I forgot to tell you. I'm not really Persian. I'm not really Babylonian. So Haman is going to kill all of my people unless you intervene. So the king finds out that she's a Jew, finds out about the plot, and you can read in the book, and we don't have time to go over every detail, he orders Haman to be hung. He honors Mordecai, and then he gets hung because of Esther's intervention. So they dress Mordecai up in royal robes, and he becomes like a governor. And the king puts, he can't rescind his edict about killing the Jews. So he issues another edict that says all the Jews are allowed to defend themselves. If somebody comes for them, they can defend themselves. So basically, nobody went after him. The Jews were saved. Mordecai was hung. Haman was hung. Mordecai becomes the governor. The king gives Mordecai Haman's property as his reward. Plus, he gets to be a governor. Isn't this cool? And he has 10 sons, and they're all hung on the same gallows that Mordecai was going to be hung on. Hanged from, I guess is the correct term. But whatever. So that's kind of how the story unfolds. So what does all this mean to us? And why is this book even in the Bible? I mean, it doesn't even mention God. I mean, why do you have a book in the Bible that doesn't mention God? That's kind of weird. Okay, it's an interesting story. Okay. This Jewish girl goes in and saves her people from a slaughter. But why is it in the Bible? What can we learn from it? So here's a possible explanation. We know about divine providence, like I said, and we know that there's always a plan, and we know that in 21st century America, we're part of this plan. Doesn't matter how many of your neighbors hate you. Doesn't matter how many of your coworkers hate you. It doesn't matter if you can never set foot in someplace. You're here to do something. You're here to do something. So you always have to listen for that voice of the Holy Spirit telling you what it is you're supposed to be doing. And people say, I never hear anything. I say, well, turn off your TV, get off of your computer, maybe spend some quiet time somewhere and listen. Maybe you'll hear something. It's pretty hard in our society to hear anything. So there's a plan. Now here's a possible explanation. Esther represents the church. How does she represent the church? She forgot that she was Jewish. The church forgot that she was Jewish. Oh, wait a minute. You know, the first century, you know, the church was predominantly Jewish. More Gentiles come into the church, gets a little more Gentile. Another 50 to 100 years go by. There's not a lot of Jewish believers coming in. There's millions of Gentile believers coming in. The church gets to be Gentile. The church forgot that she's Jewish. I can't tell you, like, you know, we're going to do the Seder here in 3 weeks. So again, sign up. Tell us how many people are coming so we know how much food to buy. But am I announcing that enough times? But it's amazing to me. I talk in a lot of churches, and when you mention to people in a church that the Last Supper was a Passover Seder, there's a certain number of people that go, what? Really? Hello? I mean, you don't know the roots and the foundation of what you believe then. You don't know where Yeshua came from, what he came to do, how he got here, how this whole plan unfolded from the creation to that day on the cross, and now is unfolding, you know, after the cross, but it's all one plan. I have to tell the funny story about the woman at the other Bible study. We were doing a Bible study in this really, really beautiful, fancy neighborhood. where all these houses were like stones and bricks and everything was perfectly manicured. And this family wanted me to come and do a Bible study, which we did for, I think, about 10 years. And I used to come in and say, are you sure I'm allowed to be in this neighborhood? Am I allowed to have my Ford parked here, you know, next to your Mercedes and Land Rovers and things? And I mean, I used to, or I'd take the opposite, make the opposite joke and say, is this a good neighborhood? Is my car safe being parked? But one day this woman came, someone had invited her to come. And we were doing, I think it was Samuel, first Samuel or second Samuel. So we were talking about all this stuff. And this woman kept sighing. And I kept saying, what's wrong? Do you have a question? She goes, no, just go ahead. Just go ahead. So went through the lesson. And then finally, she couldn't hide her anti-Semitism anymore. And she said, I cannot abide all this Jewish stuff. And I said, what? And she goes, why are you talking about all this Jewish stuff? And I said, this is an Old Testament book, for starters. She goes, ah, oh, I know. I go, well, you know, Jesus is Jewish. And she goes, I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. And I said, well? And she goes, without even flinching, she said, well, he was Jewish. But then later in his life, he became a Christian. Now imagine me being speechless. I sat there stone silent. I said, I don't even know what to say. I've never heard that before. I said, I'm withdrawing from this conversation. And then my friend Steve, you remember Steve Garchar, who used to do music here, my friend Steve engaged this woman for like hours. I said, we're leaving now. We got 45 minutes to drive home. See you guys. Yeah, but that was a first. So the church forgot that she's Jewish. It's amazing. And for people who go to liturgical churches, whether you're Catholic or Orthodox or Anglican or any church that does liturgy, so many of the prayers come right out of the synagogue. Right out of the synagogue. But people don't even stop to think. And so the church forgot that she's Jewish and doesn't want to tell anybody, just like Esther. We forgot that we're Jewish, and plus we don't want to tell anybody. Because after all, you know, we don't want to go into some place where there's a bunch of stodgy people all dressed up and say, well, you know, we have Jewish roots here in this church. Because people will go, what are you talking about? Jewish roots? You know, we've been this denomination for the last 500 years, and what... So doesn't want to tell anybody. So like Esther, she forgot, kind of forgot she was Jewish, didn't want to tell anybody. So that's kind of the background of this. So the church was Jewish, then all these other influences came in, and all these other experiences came in. Not all bad. I'm not saying they're bad. And one thing I always see whenever we've been in Jerusalem is you see so many different groups of people worshiping all around you in all different ways. And the Lord always says to me, it's a big kingdom. It's a big kingdom. You can't expect everybody in the world at every given moment all worshiping the same way. It's okay to sing a different song. It's okay to have a different order. It's okay to have different prayers. So all these influences and experiences came in. And then the Gentile church, of course, was where the power was. There's so few Jewish believers, and even though there's more, relatively very few. So the church forgot that she was Jewish because the background kind of got absorbed. So who's Mordecai? Mordecai represents Judaism. He's the Jewish man, raises her Jewish, but says, you know, don't make a big deal about it. Don't make a big deal about it because you'll be persecuted. So just kind of lay low. But he represents Judaism. We have to survive. We do whatever we have to do to survive. They lived in Eastern Europe. They lived in all over the world in diaspora. They did what they had to do in different cultures to try to stay alive. And sometimes it didn't work and so forth. But he represents Judaism. So in this book, it's like Judaism is appealing to the church. You know, help us, save us. We have common roots. You come from us. We're your foundation. We see anti-Semitism growing in the world, growing all over the place. The church should be acting on this. The church should be saying, wait a minute, that's not right. Don't, you know, we just shouldn't say, well, you know, if I persecute them, what do we care? You know, how many ministers and priests and whatever else said nothing when the Nazis came to power? They were afraid. Plus, many of them were anti-Semitic. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer was about the only, he's a Lutheran minister, he was about the only person who stood up to the Nazis. Said, I'm not going to do what you say. I'm a Christian. I'm not in support of killing whole groups of people. So they killed him. But he said something. So he appeals to the church for the common heritage and the roots, common scripture. Support Israel. Christians always support Israel. Support Israel. Why should we support Israel? Because we want to be Jews? No, because that's our heritage. That's the foundation. Those are the roots. Pray and fast for them. Prevent persecution wherever we can. Work for common causes that help them, help us, and we all stand for the true God. You can evangelize them all you want, but you also have to try to help protect them when you can. So that's Mordecai. You got to save the people. Esther, the church, you forgot you were Jewish. You didn't tell anybody. You got to do something to help us. Well, in Nazi Germany, they didn't do anything to help. Not a single church stood up to Hitler. I mean, I don't know if any of you have been in Germany. We've been in Germany quite a few times. And we go in some of these beautiful old churches, and I think, how could there have been those SS guys in here on Sunday morning? And, you know, all those guys with their uniforms and their boots. And, you know, what did they do? Go to church and then, you know, they went back in the camp in the afternoon and ran the gas chambers? I mean, you can't even wrap your head around this kind of thing. So then you got Haman, who, of course, is demonic. He represents demonic things. He represents humanism and pride. I should get the honor. I want people to bow to me. I want this. I want the king's ear on everything. And he's, of course, a carnal man. He wants riches. He has property. You can read about his property and all the stuff and his houses. And the king represents God loosely, okay, loosely. And the church is afraid of him. Esther's kind of afraid of the king. Even though she's married to him, she's kind of afraid of him. And I've heard people in churches say, well, you know, we're kind of afraid to ask God for stuff because, you know, after all, he's God and, you know, we're kind of afraid. Afraid you're an adopted son and daughter. So the church is kind of afraid. And like Esther, the church has been away for a while. The church has been doing its own thing for a long time. Hasn't been worrying about Jews, hasn't been worrying about Judeo-Christian morality like they used to. I mean, can you imagine if the Puritans who were in Massachusetts came back and saw Massachusetts now? I mean, it would be CPR on a mass scale. And so the king is asking for his bride. He wants the bride. We're the bride, as we've said so many times. But no one can approach unless he says. You know, the church is the bride. He has one bride. You can only approach if you're moved by the Holy Spirit. You come to faith in Messiah. Then you can approach. The king calls you into the room. If you go into the room and you don't have those things, you're executed. Spiritually executed. Vashti represents the false church. She doesn't respond to the king. She has some morality, but she doesn't respond to the king. The king banishes her. Esther loves the king in some way, wants to do what the king wants, not what she wants necessarily, seeks his kingdom and wants to please him in how any way she can. Until finally she says, well, I have to go plead for my people. So Haman accuses the people before the king. Where have you heard that? Book of Revelation. Satan is the great accuser of the brethren. Ha, 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 look at him. Ha, 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 ha. Satan goes before God and says, you think Bob over there is serving you? Did you see what he just did? Did you hear what he just said? Ha, some servant he is. Then he goes to Bob and says, you're serving God? You're a disaster. Look what you just did. Look what you just said. Oh, yeah. He accuses before the king. Let's get rid of these people. They're different than we are. We have people now in this world who don't believe in unlimited abortion, who don't believe in abortion at all, who don't believe in same-sex marriage, don't believe that a little girl can become a little boy, and vice versa, or that there's actually a moral law that permeates the universe. Those are troubled people. Hillary Clinton said, we have to change people's basic religious beliefs if we're going to make progress. Well, what progress is she talking about? You can Google that. It was in 2016. But anyway, Christians today, these people are different than we are. We can't let them talk. I don't care what they say in their stupid little church, but we can't have them be talking out in the street. We can't have them be on TV and radio. We can't have them on social media. They have to be canceled. So she appeals to the king, intercede for your people, because they'll come for you next. You think the Nazis would have stopped? If they'd have killed every single Jew, what would they have done next? They'd have found another group to exterminate. They'll come for you next. And Mordecai, of course, won't bow to Haman because he knows the truth and he knows what honor is. Okay? So we'll go through this quick. Because Satan, of course, is an enemy of Christians and Jews. And Haman prefigures Antichrist, who is going to be here very shortly. Woo! Very shortly. I mean, I'm sure he's already here, but he's going to be manifested shortly. So, Purim, you read the scroll, you learn the lesson, and you learn that the people in the church are not going to be destroyed. Because the plan is that the chosen people and the church, you know, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. So, that's kind of Esther, and I'm not saying this is true. This is one possible interpretation of kind of an allegory. You may have different ideas, and that's great, but please read the book. Because that's what you do during Purim. You read the whole book. It doesn't take long to read. Whew. All right.